Chapter 13.
"So you've selected Oscar Rontheim as your villain," Lily murmured. "You haven't convinced me with any solid proof."
"I agree it's all circumstantial," Pitt said. "Rontheim has the most to gain. Therefore, Rontheim has the motive. He murdered to get his hands on the undersea probe, and he's murdered to cover his tracks."
"You'll have to do better than that."
Pitt looked at Lily.
"Okay, come up with a better one."
"As an agent in good standing with the NIA, I'm embarrassed to admit that I'm a bit confused."
"You're confused?"
Pitt shook his head in mock sadness. "I can't say I find it too comforting to know our nation's security rests in your hands."
Lily smiled faintly.
"It is you who has provided the confusion, Major. It is you who has broken the chain."
"What chain?" Pitt said. "Or am I supposed to guess?"
Lily hesitated a moment before answering. Finally, he looked directly at Pitt. "During the last 18 months, a chain of strange circumstances has been forged link by link, country by country, from the southernmost tip of Chile to the northernmost border of Guatemala. Secretly, through a complex series of clandestine maneuvers, the great mining companies of South America have slowly merged into one giant syndicate. Outwardly, it's business as usual. But behind the locked and barred doors of their respective administrations, the policies governing their operations come directly from a single unknown voice."
Pitt shook his head.
"Not possible. I can name at least 5 countries that have nationalized their mining cartels. There's no way they could tie in with a private company beyond their borders."
"Nonetheless, it's a documented fact.
Where the mines have been nationalized, the management is controlled by an outside organization. The Parnagas Janios high-grade iron ore pits of Brazil, the Domingo bauxite mines of the Dominican Republic, the government silver mines of Honduras, they all take their directives from the same person or persons."
"How did you gather your information?"
"We have many sources," Lily said. "Some within the mining companies themselves. Unfortunately, our contacts have not infiltrated top-level management."
Pitt mashed his cigarette into an ashtray recessed within the car door.
"Nothing mysterious about someone attempting to gain a monopoly. If they have the guts to pull it off, more power to them."
"A monopoly is bad enough," Lily said. "The names of the men we've been able to uncover, who are high on the totem pole, include 12 of the wealthiest men in the Western world, all possessing vast financial powers in mineral exploitation, and each with tentacles so long that they reach out and control over 200 industrial corporations."
Lily paused, staring at Pitt.
"Once they gain a monopoly, they can force the prices of copper, aluminum, zinc, and several other commercial ores halfway to the moon. The resulting inflation would devastate the economies of at least 30 nations, the United States, of course, being one of the first to go to its knees."
"It doesn't necessarily follow," Pitt said. "If that happens, they and their financial empires would be sucked down, too."
Lily smiled and nodded.
"That's the catch. These men, F. James Kelly of the U.S., Sir Eric Marx of Great Britain, Roger Dupuis of France, Hans von Hummel of Germany, Ibn Mahani of Iran, and others, each worth close to 10 figures, are all loyal to their respective countries. Any one of them might chisel and cheat on taxes, but none of them would willingly send his government over the brink of economic disaster."
"Then where's the profit motive?"
"We don't know."
"And Rontheim's connection?"
"None, except his relationship with Kirsty Fury and her offshore mining interests."
There was a long silence. Then Pitt said slowly,
"The burning question, then, is where do you fit in? What does the takeover of Latin American mining syndicates have to do with Iceland? The NIA didn't send you up here to play cab driver just to learn the local highway system. While your brother agents are lurking behind potted plants watching Kelly, Marx, Dupuis, and the others, your assignment is to keep an eye on another member of the Money Boys group. Shall I mention the name, or would you like it written on paper and sealed in an envelope by Price Waterhouse?"
Lily stared at him for a moment, considering.
"You're shooting in the dark."
"Am I?"
Pitt was homing in now.
"Okay, let's drag out the suspense and digress for a moment. Admiral Sandecker said he checked every port authority between Buenos Aires and Goose Bay and found 12 that recorded the entry and departure of an Icelandic fishing trawler matching the remodeled Lax. What he should have said was that he had them checked. Someone else did the actual work for him, and that someone was the NIA.
Nothing out of the ordinary in that, Lily said flatly.
Records are sometimes easier for us to obtain than a government agency concerned with marine life.
Except you already had the information before Sandecker requested it.
Lily said nothing. He didn't have to. His grim expression was all the motivation Pitt needed to continue.
One evening, a couple of months ago, I ran into an Army communications officer in a bar. It was a slow night, and neither of us felt like partying or chasing girls, so we just sat around and drank together until closing time. He had just finished a tour of duty at the Smytheford Radio Communications Station on Hudson Bay, Canada, a complex of 200 radio masts forming a huge dish on a 1,000-acre site. Don't ask me what his name and rank were so you can turn him in for divulging military secrets. I've forgotten them anyway.
Pitt hesitated a moment to shift his feet to a more comfortable position before he went on. He was proud of the installation, especially so since he was one of the engineers who helped design and construct it. The sophisticated equipment, he said, was capable of electronically monitoring every radio transmission north of New York, London, and Moscow. After the installation was completed, he and his crew of Army engineers were politely ordered to leave for duty elsewhere. It's only guesswork on his part, of course, but he was certain that it's currently being operated by the National Intelligence Agency, which specializes in undercover eavesdropping on behalf of the Department of Defense and the Central Intelligence Agency. A rather interesting assumption when you consider that Smytheford is advertised as a satellite tracking station.
Lily leaned forward.
Just where is all this leading to?
To two gentlemen named Metagic and O'Reilly, both deceased.
You think I knew them? Lily asked curiously.
Only by name. I see little reason to explain who they were. You already know. Your people at Smytheford monitored Metagic's message to Sandecker, identifying the long-lost Lax. It must have meant little to your intelligence analysts at the time, but their electronic ears undoubtedly pricked up when they received the pilot's last message seconds before the black jet blasted all three men into the sea. At this point, the plot thickens. Admiral Sandecker played it cagey and handed the Coast Guard a phony story about missing equipment, requesting air-sea research in the area Numa's plane disappeared. Nothing was found, or at least nothing was reported. The Coast Guard struck out, but the NIA didn't. They had the Lax and its mysterious crew pinpointed right from the start. Every time the ship radioed its home base in Iceland, the Smytheford computers plotted its exact position. Now the experts at your headquarters in Washington began to smell a connection between the lost undersea probe and the mining operations takeover in South America. So they backtracked and traced the ship's movements up and down the Atlantic coast. When Sandecker asked for the same information, they discreetly waited a few days and then, fighting to keep a straight face, handed him a previously prepared copy.
Do you honestly expect me to admit to any of this?
I don't much give a damn what you admit to, Pitt said wearily. I'm merely pointing out a few facts of life. Put them all together and they spell the name of the man you have under surveillance here in Iceland.
How do you know it isn't a woman? Lily probed.
Because you've reached the same conclusions I have. Kirsty Ferry may control Ferry Limited, but Oscar Rondheim controls Kirsty Ferry.
So we're back to Rondheim.
Did we really ever leave him?
Clever, clever deduction, Major Pitt, Lily murmured.
Care to fill in any gaps?
Until I receive orders to the contrary, I can't fully brief an outsider on all the details of our operation.
Lily's voice carried an official tone that didn't quite come off.
I can, however, acknowledge your conclusions.
You are quite correct in everything you've said.
Yes, the NIA picked up Metagic's message.
Yes, we tracked the Lax.
Yes, we feel Rondheim is in some way connected with the mining syndicate. Beyond that, there is little I can officially tell you that you don't already know.
Since we've become such close friends, Pitt said, grinning, why don't you call me Dirk?
Lily was gracious in defeat.
Have it your way. But don't you dare call me Jerome, it's Jerry. He held out his hand.
Okay, partner, don't make me sorry I took you into the firm.
Pitt returned the grip.
Stick with the kid here and you'll go places.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Lily sighed and gazed over the barren countryside for a moment as if weighing the turn of events. Finally, he broke his thoughts and looked at his watch.
We'd better head back to Reykjavik. No thanks to you, I've got a busy night ahead of me.
What's on your agenda? First, I want to contact headquarters as soon as possible and pass on the serial number of the Black Jet. With a bit of luck, they should be able to run a make and have the owner's name back to us by morning. For your sake, after all the trouble you went to, I hope it provides an important lead. Second, I'm going to poke around and see where that hydroplane was moored. Somebody has got to know something. You can't keep a craft like that a secret on an island this small. And third, the two scaled replicas of South American Capitol buildings. I'm afraid you threw us a weird twist when you fished them up from the briny deep. They must have a functional purpose. They may be vital to whoever built them, or they may not. Just to play safe, I'd better request Washington to fly in an expert on miniatures and have every square inch of those models thoroughly examined. Efficient, industrious, professional. Keep it up. I may slowly become impressed. I'll try to do my best, Lily said sarcastically. Would you like an extra hand? Pitt asked. I'm free for the evening. Lily smiled a smile that made Pitt feel a twinge of uneasiness. Your plans are already made, Dirk. I wish I could trade places with you, but duty calls. I'm afraid to ask what's on your nasty little mind, Pitt said dryly. A party, you lucky dog. You're going to a poetry reading party. You've got to be kidding. No, I'm serious. By special invitation from Oscar Rondheim himself, though I suspect it was Miss Fury's idea. Pitt's eyebrows came together over his penetrating green eyes. How do you know this? How could you know this? No invitation arrived before you picked me up at the consulate. A trade secret. We do manage to pull a rabbit out of the hat occasionally. Okay, I'll concede a point and stick a gold star on your chart for the day. It was beginning to get chilly, so Pitt rolled up his window. A poetry reading, he said disgustedly. God, that ought to be a winner.